We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
And welcome to Overnight America. Wow. I love these 8 o'clock starts. Thank you for hanging out with us tonight. If it's for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 4 hours, I'm just happy that we could spend a little time together on a Monday. You can reach the show by calling 314-436-7900. Or 800-925-1120. Our friend Rich Rubino joins us every Monday. His book, American Politics on the Rocks. He wants to look at a couple of different things, including some of the House Democrats who represent districts where Trump won. They came into conversation over the past week. How are they going to play these impeachment hearings? Historically speaking, is it good or bad for them to lean into what the party is or what's safe for their district? So we'll ask him about that. Ghostbusters got a new trailer today. Ooh, I'm a big Ghostbusters guy. I grew up in the 80s. I was a Ghostbuster for no less than 5 straight years for Halloween. And because I still had my outfit in the parents' basement and the parents brought it up to the house more recently, my kid was also a Ghostbuster this past year using the same equipment, the plastic backpack and the traps and things like that. Next hour, Michael Barron's going to join us from the Wildlife Command Center. He's someone that is very well trained when it comes to getting rid of, you know, pest exterminations, things like that in the area. So I want to ask him what it's like in St. Louis, what kind of things they come in contact with. And it has to do with something I saw online. Let me get that. There was an ad online. Where was it? Here it is. Animal birthday party, 2 hours, 2 ring-tailed lemurs and 3 additional animals. There's a coupon someone posted, like a screenshot of it, and they said, what's up with this? Animal party. I'm like, you know what? That's kind of interesting. So I reached out to him, and he said, yeah, I'll come in. We'll talk about animals, and that'll be fun. That'll be all next hour. Don't forget, too, a week from today will be the KMOX Holiday Radio Show. This year's play, Don't Forget to Remember the Future. It's an awesome, awesome play. Kevin Kline writes it every year, and every year it's fantastic. I was going through the script today and highlighting my parts, getting ready, maybe mouthing some of my parts. You know, you can't say it with the full sense of urgency and the full type of feelings you get when you're on stage in front of a group of people, but you still try a little bit. And I can't really reveal much about the play next week. What I can say, if you want to get a ticket to see it, you're not going to waste your time. You're going to love it. Tickets are cheap. Have you ever seen a live radio performance like this before? Honestly, this doesn't happen anymore. It's rare that you find live radio dramas performed in front of an audience. In fact, you don't even find radio dramas at all. They don't exist, but you can be a part of it. All the KMOX personalities will be there. It's a fun night, and you get to stumble with us. You get to laugh with us. You get to cry with us. There's probably not going to be any crying. But if you want to get the tickets, they're super cheap. You can go to KMOX.com, and the event section, you can find them right there. It's a week from today, December 16th, at the Sheldon Concert Hall. It's awesome. If you haven't participated in the past, come out and try it this year. If you've been to one in the past, you know how fun it is. Honestly, I don't even know if there's tickets left. I think there's still tickets left, but they go so quick. It's always the week before that they sell out. So this is like the final countdown week. You get a bunch at the start. There's a couple hundred tickets that sold right away. Obviously, it was like 200 or 300 tickets right away. And then you have the rest of the tickets available after that. A lot of value seats left. Make it a date night. It's a fun, fun, fun thing for you to do. KMOX.com. You can get details right there. All right, Rich Rubino, American Politics on the Rocks. That'll be coming up. And later in the show, of course, we're going to talk about some of the things that happened today in the impeachment hearing. There are some developments in the Loop Trolley, and I got a couple of notes on that, too. It's getting a little bit ridiculous, and they're still dangling out this hope. Let's save the Loop trolley, they say. No, let's not. Let's not. You got, at some point, you got to cut it loose. You know what the Loop trolley is like? Have you ever bought a car and it's a lemon and you can't return it? And the person says, okay, you spent, let's just say $10,000 on a car, but it's going to take $20,000 or $25,000 to fix it. And you say, I'm going to have to cut my losses. It's not worth putting an extra, doubling the amount of work it takes to get this thing to run. Sorry, it's just not worth the investment. This is backwards because the government is saying, oh, no. It's probably better so it's not a total waste. We're going to spend way more than it's worth. We're going to keep putting more and more and more into this. There's no guarantee the thing will work after that. There's no guarantee that you'll actually use it after it. But we're just going to keep throwing money at it. That's the way the government's looking at this thing right now. It's ridiculous. So we'll get to that, too. And the text messaging up, if you want to message me at any time during the show, at Ryan Recker on Twitter or 436-7900. Our friend Richard Bino's up next. It's Overnight America KMOX.
Now back to Overnight America on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
And welcome back to Overnight America. And on Mondays, we like to check in with Rich Rubino, author of American Politics on the Rocks. I always enjoy our time with him. Hello, Rich.
Hello, Ryan. How are you?
Good. How's the life where you're at?
Not bad. It's about 50 degrees here, so not too bad.
Oh, yeah. We are getting our last, 50-degree day was today. Tomorrow, it just instantly starts to get cold again. Now, we enjoyed it for the last few days, and we pretty much wasted them. So now it's just basically in the freezing range from here on out. Rich, I was wondering, have you been watching a lot of the impeachment hearings for historical purposes?
Oh, yeah. Can't not watch them.
Yeah. So you've been really paying attention to this. How many hours would you say you put into viewing the current impeachment questioning and testimony?
Probably about three on and off. I mean, it gets so repetitious because you know exactly what the Republicans are going to ask, you know what the Democrats are going to ask, and so much of it, too, is grandstanding. Mm. They're basically, it's like, Mo Udall used to say that everything has been said, but not everyone has said it. So lots of times you'll see, I mean, that's exactly what you're seeing. You're seeing essentially, you're hearing the same things from every congressman basically making the same statement. I think a lot of it is for domestic consumption. They're saying to their constituents, this is what I'm saying. I'm supporting your position. So that's got a lot to do with it, I think. But there's really nothing new. Very rarely do you hear a congressman just come out of the woodwork or a Democrat say, I don't think I'm going to vote for impeachment, or a Republican say, I think this might actually be a good idea. There was one on the Intelligence Committee, Bill Hurd, who comes from a Democratic-leaning district, kind of a swing district in southern Texas, the biggest district geographically in Texas. And he's retiring next time around. So there was some thought that maybe he would be the one that would come out and say that, yes, I'm essentially going to support the impeachment at some point. But he didn't do that. So there's very little new from these hearings.
Uh-huh. I like how you put it that way, and that's essentially it. It seems anytime I randomly turn it on, let's see what's going on, and it could have been on a tape delay, or they could have replayed a day, and no one would have noticed.
And it's also, you're back to the Clinton impeachment. You hear the same arguments, it's just from different sides. I remember that when the Clinton impeachment was going on, when those hearings were going on, I remember the Democrats would get up and they would say, the Ken Starr spent $40 million. We really should be dealing with the issues that affect the American people. Now, fast forward to 2019, the Republicans are saying, why are we wasting our time doing this rather than focusing on the issues that affect the American people? So, you can take the Democrats and Republicans and put them in, go back to 1998, go back to 2019, and you have almost the exact same arguments from the different parties.
Oh, that's funny. You were talking about sometimes different congressmen will retire and then they end up doing something that maybe breaks the ranks. And that's kind of always an interesting thing because they got nothing to lose at that point.
Yes.
They may be able to just be able to vote the way they want to vote on something. What's interesting is that there's certain House Democrats who represent districts where Donald Trump won. And there was just recently I saw the graphics put up on the television screen. They had all the graphics up there. And they're saying, okay, they're in predominantly Trump areas. Will this change the way they handle the impeachment hearings because they'll be afraid they won't get reelected if they go against Donald Trump, even though they are a Democrat? That's kind of an interesting thing that we've seen play out.
Yep. Yeah, no, it's interesting specifically on this. There are 31 Democrats who represent districts where Donald Trump won in 2018. Since every congressman is up every 2 years, that would mean that their congressional district had what's called split voting, meaning that they voted for the Republican for president and then they voted for the Democrat for Congress. So what that tells us is that, first of all, they're very good candidates because they're able to win in elections that are where there could potentially be electorally vulnerable, and they're able to win in districts where, you know, are not necessarily hospitable to members of their party. Now, there's one outlier on this, and that's Collin Peterson. He comes from he was one of two Democrats, Jeffrey Van Drew from Jersey was the other, who voted against the idea, not of the impeachment itself, but the idea of having an impeachment inquiry. And he's a fascinating guy. He comes from a district, northern Minnesota, very agricultural district, and his district went 31 points for Trump last time, 31 points. So you say, how is this guy possibly able to get elected in a district that is that Republican? And the answer is that he's always done this by basically being the most conservative Democrat in the House of Representatives. On guns, on abortion, on gay marriage, he votes with the Republicans.
Huh.
So, and you know what, though? The Democratic Party, it's acceptable. He does not get punished because he does not come from a district. It's not like he comes from a district where you have to vote Democrat. It's not like he comes from Nancy Pelosi's district in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
The party realizes that as soon as he retires, almost invariably the district is going to go to a Republican, that it's his personal popularity, the fact that he's the chairman of the Agricultural Committee, and the fact that he has some personal charisma with that district, that he's able to get reelected, and he barely gets reelected. Last time it was 52%. So he gets a pass on just about every vote that he has. He's really an outlier because his district is so Republican. He's from such a conservative district that the Democrats are extremely lucky that that district is not Republican. But there are other folks that come from more swing, that come from districts that have perhaps just got elected last time. Max Rose, a recent Democrat, got elected in 2016. He got elected from a conservative Republican district. He had military experience. There are other Democrats like that who I think that who come from districts that maybe go 10, 13 points for the Republican in the national level, then they somehow barely eke out a victory. There are two, Ben McAdam from Utah. He represents a district in Utah. He won last time in part because he was mayor of Salt Lake County. He had some personal popularity, some personal name recognition there. He's going to have a very tough battle, particularly if he decides he's going to vote for the impeachment. He did vote for the impeachment inquiry. The other one is Joe Cunningham in South Carolina. The only reason he got elected in part, Mark Sanford, the former governor of South Carolina,
who
was considering running against President Trump. So he ran in a primary. So he was primaried, and the primary candidate was in many respects too conservative for the district. So the primary candidate beat Mark Sanford. Then Joe Cunningham, a young and attractive guy, was able to beat him, was barely able to beat him in the general election. So those are the ones that are really vulnerable. You know, it's interesting, by the way, and during the Clinton impeachment, there were actually five Democrats who voted for impeachment of Bill Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
Three of them later became Republicans. Virgil Good of Virginia later became a Republican. He was very conservative. Then he became a member of the Constitution Party, actually, and ran for president himself. Then you had Ralph Hall, who a few years after that became a Republican himself and kept on getting reelected as a Republican. And then Gene Taylor, who came from a district that would go like 69% for the Republican congressional for the Republican congressman, for the Republicans at the national level, then he would always win this congressional district in Biloxi, Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened? He eventually lost his reelection bid in 2010, in part because he voted for Nancy Pelosi as Speaker. He had never done that before, and he came back and tried to run again as a Republican. One of them was Charlie Stenholm, a Blue Dog Democrat, very conservative Democrat. He ended up losing as his seat was redistricted to the point that he could not win a seat anymore in 2004, but he stayed a Democrat. And there was kind of an outlier that year, Paul McHale from Pennsylvania, who was kind of a center-left Democrat, but decided he was going to vote for the impeachment. And a great trivia question, the only one who voted for all four articles of impeachment was actually Gene Taylor from Mississippi. The others only voted for two or three.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot. Rich Rubino, American Politics on the Rocks, is the name of your book, where people can find it on Amazon. It's funny, you brought up at the time Mark Sanford, and you didn't even mention the disappearance. I was waiting for that. I guess he has something in common with Donald Trump. Wasn't he threatened to be impeached in his when he was the governor?
Yes. Well, he actually – so he was governor of South Carolina. He was relatively popular. And then he took a, shall we say, a well, he said it was an extradition on the Appalachian Trail.
it wasn't
actually on the Appalachian Trail.
Mm-hmm.
He took an expedition instead to see his mistress.
Yeah.
And eventually he had to resign, but he came back.
Mm-hmm.
And this is fascinating. This is when he won in the congressional district right around Charleston, South Carolina. He actually came back, and this is somebody who had been a governor, had been humbled, had to resign his office, came back and won that congressional seat,
mm-hmm.
and then it was reelected. And then, by 2018, he had been somewhat critical of President Trump on a few things, and President Trump actually supported his primary opponent, which is usually unheard of. The general synopsis is, the general view is that if there's an incumbent member of your party running for reelection, the president supports them.
Right.
If there's something outlandish that they did, maybe, you know, for example, the only example I can think of where a president didn't support the person running for would have been someone like David Duke, for example. Somehow, you know, in Louisiana, they have this jungle primary system where all Republicans, Democrats, and all parties run together. He beat Buddy Romer, the incumbent governor, and George H.W. Bush reluctantly said, yeah, I'm going to support Edwin Edwards because, you know, David Duke was not what they wanted, the voice of the Republican Party. But almost invariably, they support the incumbent. Donald Trump did not do that. So the incumbent, Mark Sanford, lost the primary, and then Joe Cunningham ended up winning in the general election. He's a Democrat, very vulnerable Democrat.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to talk to you, and just generally speaking, let's say, you know, remember that old game show, Name That Tune?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, where
I remember that.
They would get up there and they would say, I can name that in 10 tunes, and now I can do it in 9, I can do it in 8, or whatever it was, different notes. Now, let's say you were to go toe-to-toe up against an average congressman, who would be able to name more sitting congressmen that are serving in office right now? Do you feel pretty confident you can name more than the average actual congressman could?
Depends on how long they've been in Congress for.
Yeah, let's say a freshman, someone that's
A freshman, I don't know. I don't know if I'd be how well I'd be doing some of the pronunciations. So many of the names you read, but then they ask you to pronounce them. I don't know if I'd be able necessarily to pronounce them.
Well, you wouldn't get dinged for a mispronunciation. I think people would give you a little bit of leeway there because there's so many different names you just gave in your talk right there, and it made me wonder. It's like, does he know every single person that serves in office right now? It makes me wonder if how many you actually could name off the top of your head. It's got to be a high number.
Honestly, I could probably, out of 435 voting members, my guess is I could probably name about 411.
Whoa!
That's my guess.
That's so good.
I could be going over the, I don't know. There are some freshmen that you don't necessarily know the name, and obviously some of them you read all the time, but you don't necessarily hear people announce them, so I might not necessarily be able to spell their names right, but in terms of identifying who they are, what state they represent, I would say that probably around there.
Wow, that is impressive. I don't know how you do that. How do you keep up? How do you say?
Because there's nothing else up there.
Because there's nothing else going. Rich Rubino, again,
it's
if people want to look you up online, where can they find you?
Just go to www.polita-geek.com or find me on Rich Rubino on Facebook, and I put all my interviews up there as well.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing when some pretty big news could surface and no one's paying attention to it. Like, for example, what's going to be the next step past NAFTA, the agreement with Canada and Mexico.
Yes.
There was some news that came out today that we could see an agreement, I mean, very soon. It looks like they're pretty close to finalizing that. That's pretty big news. Nothing. It's buried today because of everything that else is going on. And then I haven't even seen any of the presidential candidates out there stumping, mostly because the only time that they talk about it is when they resurface the Joe Biden video from 2017 about kids touching his legs in the pool. So that resurfaces too. You know, let's talk a little bit about the presidential election, the Democrats that are going to be running to try to be the next candidate. There's a few things that have come up since last week. Do you mind holding on after the break?
Absolutely.
Rich Rubino is the author of American Politics on the Rocks. We'll continue our conversation with him next on Overnight America, KMOX.
News Radio 1120, KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals.
Overnight America continues with our guest, Rich Rubino. We check in with him on Mondays, his book, American Politics on the Rocks. Thanks for hanging on, Rich.
You're welcome.
I'm going to... Let's see, Real Clear Politics. Just pull them up real quick, and I was seeing what the latest average polling was for some of the Democratic candidates. Right now, it looks like Biden, Sanders, Warren, Buttigieg, Bloomberg is up there, too. So it's interesting to see Bloomberg a late bloomer, per se, get into it, and he's polling pretty well. But what's interesting is candidates like Pete Buttigieg. There was a certain surge there for a while. When you get into Iowa, huge surge. He looked like he could even be the front runner if he just took that state there for a while. And what's interesting about candidates like him, where there's certain surges that you don't expect to see that. I mean, even Bloomberg, I guess, could surge for some. But what happens normally when you see someone come from, you know, the middle of the pack and rush all the way to the front? Is there some sort of precedent you normally see from the past experiences?
Yeah, I think actually there are two that are very similar to what's going on with Buttigieg. The first is Jimmy Carter in 76. Very similar. You know, politics is all about timing. If Jimmy Carter had run any other year, he probably would not have a chance. But the reason he had a chance in 76 was, first of all, he was a one-term governor that had about 2% name recognition outside of Georgia. He'd served two terms as state senate, one term as governor. There was a poll in 1974 of the 31 potential Democratic nominees. Jimmy Carter's name was not even on it because he was so low in stature, no one thought of him as a major candidate. But he worked the grassroots. He had all the peanut brigades going up to Iowa, New Hampshire, and they went up and they basically sold him as somebody who was outside of Washington, untainted by Washington. And that was the time, luckily for him, the high watermark of Watergate. And then after Watergate, Americans were looking for somebody that was not part of the Washington cartel. So they had a lot of opponents who had a lot more experience. You had Fred Harris of Oklahoma. You had Governor Milton Sharp of Pennsylvania. You had a lot of candidates that year. I think the main was probably Scoop Jackson from Washington State, who was the early front runner. But Carter went and he played and said, "I'm someone from outside of Washington," and people wanted that. Mm-hmm. And eventually he was able to win, to come in second to Iowa to essentially none of the above. Then he won New Hampshire, and then there was like a freight train. They tried to get Jerry Brown, the governor of California, who was very popular, 80% job approval running in California, to run. He did run, but it was a stop Carter movement, but Carter ended up winning. Similar to what's going on right now. Buttigieg is everything in a sense that Trump is not. He's very stoic, very somewhat intellectual. He comes off as somebody who's kind of somewhat quiet, somewhat taciturn, and he's someone from outside of Washington. And that is what, in many respects, the country is looking for right now. So he had this one appearance on CNN Town Hall. People really liked him. And then in this case, you have all these people with so much more experience wondering, how is a 37-year-old mayor of the fourth biggest city in a medium-sized state doing this well? So Jimmy Carter was one where the surge could not be stopped. He became just a juggernaut and went on to win the presidency. Now contrast that to Howard Dean in 2003. Howard Dean got national notoriety because in Vermont, as governor, he signed the first legislation nationally which legalized civil unions for homosexual couples. He actually had to wear a bulletproof vest. It became a huge issue. He ran for re-election in 2002, barely won re-election, but became kind of a martyr for the cause. But he was still about 2 or 3% of the vote. And the problem that year was John Edwards, John Kerry, Dick Gephardt, the major candidates had all voted for the war in Iraq. And Howard Dean goes out there and he says, you know, he comes up to a speech in New Hampshire. Very few people had heard of this former governor of Vermont. He says, "I just want to say I represent the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party, and I'm sick and tired of everybody, you know, being so wishy-washy on Iraq." And said, essentially, I was opposed to the Iraq war from the beginning. And, you know, all these other plans he has, his health care plan, his balanced budget plan, that stuff is all subservient to his proposal, to his opposition of the Iraq war, and the fact that he was so vociferous at it. So he becomes a front runner.
Mm-hmm.
There's one point after a debate where after John Kerry keeps being asked questions about Dean, he says, "Dean, Dean, Dean." You know, he never expected this former. He expected he was going to have a challenge with someone like Dick Gephardt, someone who was just formidable.
Right.
But the problem with Dean that year is he landed up, it petered out, because when it went to Iowa, Dick Gephardt, who Dean had actually worked for in 1988 when he ran for president the first time, and Howard Dean, it became mutually assured destruction. They kept going after each other. And in a state like Iowa, a negative campaign does not necessarily work well. So as a result, he was seen as somebody who was seen as kind of a negative campaigner. And John Kerry and John Edwards essentially rose to the top. But, you know, you did have a point there where he was the front runner, and it's very similar because he was someone from a state that very few people had heard of, but he just had a message at the time. And the message was, I'm categorically opposed to the Iraq war, and I'm not going to try to, you know, fudge it like John Kerry and these other candidates did.
You know, if you were to, I guess, handicap the presidential nomination on the Democrat side. And Joe Biden's still leading in almost every poll I've seen, just nationally.
Nationally.
Where would you put the odds of Biden actually being the nominee this time next year? Well, not this time next year, but in general for the Democrat Party.
43%.
Wow, that's a pretty specific number.
43.72, no.
It's a little bit less than 50-50, you think. But that's pretty good, considering how many are in the ring right now.
Well, yeah, and the thing with Joe Biden is, in many respects, I think that he's very similar to what John Kerry was in 2004. People fell in love with Howard Dean, and they fell in line with John Kerry because the belief was that John Kerry was more likely to be electable. You know, the modus operandi that Joe Biden has right now is to tell everybody that he's electable, and all these polls that show in the Rust Belt in Pennsylvania, where he was actually born in Scranton, in Ohio, in Iowa, as long as those show that he's doing better than the other candidates, and at a point where the Democrats, a lot in the Democratic Party, the preponderance of people, as opposed to somebody, you know, passing an ideological litmus test, is we want somebody who's going to defeat Trump. The polls show that he can defeat Trump, so I don't think he's going to necessarily, for some people rather, he's not going to be their first choice. They're going to say, you know what, I want someone who can beat him. Now, that being said, if the polls start to show that someone like Buttigieg at least does as well as Biden does, then I think in many respects, then he loses that luster, and that's the one thing that he does have right now is the electability argument. The electability, that's the face card for him right now, is I'm electable, and that's why I put it at 43%, because there's such a movement in the Democratic Party just to get anybody other than Trump.
It's very specific. Now, when you were traveling, you went to one of the forums, was it in New Hampshire?
Yes, New Hampshire, yes.
Yeah, and you mentioned how sometimes the politicians, after their speech, will talk to the press, and others just wave and go away, and Joe Biden was one of the waivers,
yeah,
right?
Oh, absolutely,
didn't
yeah.
really need to. Now, I feel like he's doing that a lot, too, when people are questioning this video that surfaced to him back when he was dedicating a public pool in 2017.
Yes.
People have some questions what he meant by certain things he said in that, and he's not talking about it. So is that really probably the best strategy you can go about when there's this sort of controversy around you?
No, I don't think so.
Oh.
I think what he's trying, I know what his aides are telling him. They're probably telling him that you have to say that you're above this, that you're above it all, that, you know, this is such a ridiculous question. We need to focus on the issues. And sometimes that works. But in this case, I think because of social media, because people just keep playing it and playing it and playing it, it's very hard to get that out of the headlines. And there's always going to be somebody that's going to ask that question. And specifically, there's going to be reporters going to ask that question just because somebody is going to say, you know, did you see this with Biden? Did you see this with Biden? Did you see this with Biden? And if he doesn't come out with an answer, just saying something to the effect of, oh, I was just talking, you know, I was just, you know, I was joking, I was joshing, something to that effect, or just that it was just a story from my youth, something like that, and just let it go away, it's just going to keep percolating to the surface. Now, I don't think any other Democratic presidential candidate is going to bring it up, but it's certainly something that if not the mainstream media is going to bring it up, there are going to be a lot of people that can kind of get into some of these press briefings because they're with, you know, some newspaper, they're with some blog, and they're going to keep bringing it up. And eventually what's going to happen is he speaks off the cuff. He's just going to get incensed. He's just going to say, hey, man, that is such a stupid question. And I don't think it's necessarily going to work out very well for him, but, you know, that's a strategy that he's employing. But I don't see it just going away and people saying, oh, well, he didn't answer it. It's a perfect example. And this is on a completely other level. But
yeah.
When it came to Ted Kennedy, in terms of Chappaquiddick, he went out, about a week before this, he actually came and he spoke to the voters in Massachusetts and he gave a speech and he said, this is what happened, this is what happened, this is what happened. And then after that, when people would ask him the question, he would say, I've already addressed that issue.
Mm.
So you almost wonder if Joe Biden would just come up to a press conference and say, you know, I just wanted to say this is a statement. This is what I meant. This is what I meant. Now let's focus on the issues. And now let's focus on seniors with drug prices. Let's focus on the economy. Let's focus on health care. Let's focus on getting our reputation, something like that, back, something like that, as opposed to just being asked about it and just having it, you know, like become, you know, a death of a thousand cuts.
Yeah. Or as Joe Biden would say, you better watch it, Jack. Something like that. You don't see a Tulsi Gabbard bringing it up on a debate stage. She seems to focus in on a person. And, you know, when she has that laser sight on a candidate, it seems like she can do a lot of damage.
No, not her specifically, because so here's the thing with Tulsi Gabbard. So she announced recently that she's not running for re-election. She's never going after Joe Biden. She's literally renting a house in New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
So her political career in Hawaii is probably over. I think what she's looking for, and is some sort of a position in a Biden administration. And if you notice, she goes after Biden's opponents. She
yeah.
never goes after
oh.
him. She goes after the people that are most threatening to him. And at one point, they asked her about Biden's vote in 2002 for the authorization of use of force in Iraq. This could have been, you know, this could have been really something for her. This could have been her citadel to go after the fact that she was opposed to the Iraq war, everything else. She didn't do that. She said, well, he apologized. So she'll go after just about, other than Bernie Sanders, who she supported last time, and Joe Biden. I don't think those are the two she's going to go after. I think she's looking for some sort of a job in one of those two administrations. So obviously it's not going to be Secretary of State. She has some baggage because of her meeting with Bashar al-Assad, of the president of Syria. But in terms of a job in somehow in the Biden administration, I can totally see that happening. And to do that, you do not do anything to alienate Joe Biden.
Yeah. The next Democratic debate is coming up next Thursday, the 19th.
Right, before
the end of the year. That seems like it'll be a forgotten one. It's coming into a holiday. Most people aren't really paying attention. It's almost like all the TV networks throw the reruns up there because they know no one's going to be watching new episodes. So this is, I feel like the viewership will be low, and I feel like people are really not going to be watching this. The viewership has dipped pretty much from the start anyway. I feel like people are fatigued doing one a month, and they're tired of it to begin with. So I don't know how many people are going to be watching this one. I'm sure you will. We'll have to get you on after the debates are over next Thursday.
Yeah, absolutely. But I will say this. I'd love to do it. I will say this, though. In terms of the debate, I think that the audience isn't necessarily the people that are watching live as much as it. A lot of, I mean, people the next week, there's going to be on social media. There's going to be radio shows talking about it. And I think people are just going to get kind of, you know, what the headline was from the debate. Mm-hmm. If, for example, you know, if Tulsi Gabbard goes after somebody, again, just kind of left field, like when she went up for Pete Buttigieg, if she goes after, you know, if she were to go after Biden or Sanders, people would say, whoa, or something to that effect. Or if Cory Booker, I mean, this could be potentially his last stand. So, you know, if he really has to make a case why donors and benefactors need to give him money in order to stay in for Iowa and New Hampshire. So, you know, that's a lot of it. A lot of it is speaking to donors, is speaking to benefactors, making the case why they should give you money, why you can win the nomination, and then why you can garner the entire election.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of it.
Rich Rubino, the book is called American Politics on the Rocks, which you can find on Amazon. If they want to look you up online, where can they find you?
Just go to www.polita-geek.com or just find me on Facebook.
Very easy. Just do a Google search, Rich Rubino, and you'll be able to find it right there. Hey, thank you so much for hooking up with us again tonight on Overnight America.
Oh, great. Good to see you next week.
See you next week. And he joins us on the Quiver River Electric KMOX guest line. Big part of my childhood was growing up watching the Ghostbusters. I probably have watched Ghostbusters as much as I've watched Back to the Future. And that's saying that I've watched it about 1.5 million times combined. So the new trailer came out today. Let's talk about that next on Overnight America KMOX.
This is Overnight America, sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com on KMOX.
Welcome back to Overnight America. I have such a good time learning from Rich Rubino. Man, how about that? He can name over 400 congressmen currently serving. Wow! That is a talent. There's a talent show. He stands up on stage, names them in alphabetical order. Boom, 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 one after another after another. We're going to be posting that as a podcast in just a moment at KMOX.com/ONA. And for the next hour, we're going to bring in Michael Barron from the Wildlife Command Center. I think it'll be a lot of fun to talk animals, and sometimes the ones you want to keep as pets, other times the ones you want to get out of that house. So we'll do that too. But something happened today to me that is extremely exciting. Ow, ow, ow. I got to tell you, I bought all the toys when I was a kid. Well, I didn't. My parents did. Every kid I knew, every kid in my grade had the Ghostbusters firehouse. I think I still have the toy hearse somewhere, the action figures stored in the basement. Who you gonna call? Ghostbusters! And you know what? I just can't wait for my son to get old enough to watch this with him. You know, even though these old movies are rated PG, there's still certain references you're like, I don't think I would introduce it that early. And there's still some, you know, scary ghosts and things like that. I don't think he's ready for it. So one day he will be ready, and I'll be able to share with him what I think are one of my favorite movies in the 80s. That and Back to the Future. I must have watched Back to the Future so many times that I could nearly rehearse. Like, you can tell me a scene, you tell me the line, and I'll tell you what was said after that line. And when he gets old enough, I can't wait to show it to him, and it'll be the biggest disappointment in my life if he ends up not liking those movies. If we watch those films and he says, nah, I didn't like it, my chest will probably feel tight. I may just fall over and they're going to have to rush me to the hospital. I mean, that's what would happen. So in today, number one trending on YouTube is the trailer for Ghostbusters Afterlife. So far, 5.1 million people have watched the trailer for the new Ghostbusters movie. Here's who's starring in it. Paul Rudd is starring in it. They're bringing back Bill Murray to play Dr. Peter Venkman. Also bringing back Sigourney Weaver. Oh, man. Dan Aykroyd's coming in, too. Ernie Hudson, they're bringing them all back. Ah! Oh, this is so exciting to see this sort of thing. Now, the whole premise of this trailer is to show that I think it's the grandkids of the original Ghostbusters. And, you know, they set it up in this trailer that people have been watching.
What are you doing here in Somerville anyway?
Honestly, my mom won't say it, but we're completely broke.
All right, so they move into the city where, you know, small, out of the city into the middle of nowhere.
This is a creepy old farmhouse our grandfather left us in the middle of nowhere.
Creepy old farmhouse. Now, you find out that creepy old farmhouse is Egon's granddaughter, who becomes, I think, the lead in the movie. Is that Carrie Coon or McKenna Grace? I'm not exactly sure which one's which, but they get top billing in this sort of thing. And it's almost like the grandkids are getting old enough. They look like they're, you know, 14, something like that, if I had to guess an age.
What is that? I don't know.
So they go to the grandpa's farm, and they see some ghosts. Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
Somehow, a town that isn't anywhere near a tectonic plate, that has no fault lines, no fracking, no loud music even, is shaking on a daily basis.
There's Paul Rudd. I'm so glad they got Paul Rudd. I am so glad. Jason Reitman is still directing this movie. I mean, they're really bringing it back. Writing credits from Dan Aykroyd, Harold Ramis, Jason Reitman. And it's interesting to see Harold Ramis based on characters that were created by him in the original Ghostbusters. So they're trying to keep it back to the original. When they went off and they veered off and they did the Ghostbusters and they said, oh, we need to reinvent the Ghostbusters. And here's a crazy idea. We'll flip the script. Instead of four guys, we'll do four girls. Genius. Everyone hated it. It was a terrible movie. Not because they switched it out and they thought they were being so creative, and it totally disrespected the original idea of Ghostbusters, the whole spirit of what made it wonderful and just unique movie from the 80s that so many kids loved and enjoyed. So if they're trying to go back to that, kind of like Stranger Things, where they incorporate the kids and they get into, you know, some sort of adult situations, but not in an adult way. You know, it's just like Goonies style, and they want to try to recreate that with Ghostbusters, the grandkids of the original Ghostbusters. Count me in! Oh, this whole thing looks great.
Come to the dining table now!
Hey, remember that one summer we died under a table?
All right. So here they are. There's this barn shed area where it looks like, I'm guessing, Egon's granddaughter figures out some sort of puzzle and it opens up the secret area of the farmhouse where all of the equipment is stored secretly. And, you know, she brings in the trap, that they use to capture the ghosts. And the Paul Rudd character looks at it and says, oh, what a cool recreation. This is the coolest I've ever seen. Then he realizes it's the real thing. And then he realizes who he's talking to, which is Egon's granddaughter. They bring back Ecto-1. They show him driving around. Ah! They hit all the... They showed him sliding down fire poles. They tried to check off as many of the old classic Ghostbuster things that people remember and love about that as they could. I am so excited for this. It's going to come out next year. I don't know exactly if they have a date yet. Is it summer 2020? May of 2020, even nicer. All right. People are going to be rolling their windows down, driving to the theater to watch Ghostbusters, May of 2020. So exciting. You can go check that trailer out for yourself. It's the number one thing trending on YouTube. Let me refresh this, and let's see if there's more people that have watched it since. Now it's almost at 5.2 million. Just in that time we started talking about it, over 500,000 people watched. Over 500,000. Not 500,000. Over 500,000. Watched it. So that's something. All right, so coming up in the next hour, we're going to welcome in a special guest. He's from the Wildlife Command Center. His name is Michael Barron. We're going to have some fun with that. What I first noticed about him was a coupon that was online, Animal Birthday Party, and I said, there's got to be a good story behind that. And it turns out there is. So we're going to tell that story coming up next on Overnight America. I'm on Twitter at Ryan Recker. You can find me on there, and you can listen to any part of the show whenever you want at KMOX.com/ONA.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.